I am battling with the ultimate vibration. Sarawat Songs the Taya and Nicola Farquhar's work in Heavy Trees, Arms and Legs. And if here I have to use words for you, they must create an almost exclusively bodily meaning. To tell you my substratum, I make a sentence of words composed only of the now instance. Clarice Lispector, Agua Viva, 1973. Look at Nicola Farquhar's tree. It's triangular, mostly hard green, with red-orange rods that run down each of its sloping sides. In the centre is a grill like the baleen in a whale's mouth, flanked by two forms that look like books and two lit candles. Above that is a circle that is the moon. Above that, perhaps there is a white iced donut. Look at one of Sarawat Songs the Taya's seaside town works. It's a cup filled with milk or made of white stone. Near the top, the white is replaced with a solid, honey-coloured wax layer, and it's full to the brim. Sunken into the wax are fish bones, vanilla and harakeke pods, grains of rice and pieces of pawa shell. There are also artificial eyelashes and fingernails. Looking at it heightens other senses too. I see the wax and a grassy heat arrives with it. I see the bones and fingernails and remember what it feels like to carefully separate a fish skeleton from its flesh. And maybe looking is not enough. Reading this text is not how it feels to experience tree or seaside town. None of these descriptions are satisfying. They alienate parts of the whole from one another. They disrupt the sense of vitality I feel when standing in front of the works. Already, these works are so full of life. They are like a forest when no one is there, when the trees are breathing loud and maybe even walking around. I don't know for sure. I want a text to have enough space in it for that kind of life, for Clarice Lispector's ultimate vibration, in which the work is a body, a series of now instants, an emotion. I want a text that allows us to understand the world as something we are part of, inside of us as we are inside of the world. When I look at this work, I swallow it too, or it swallows me. I propose considering Farquhar and Songs the Taya's works as a series of events, or instants, that we move through, addressing each of the material elements through taste, texture, association, and in relation to other texts. Conversely, I'm interested in the experience of writing and thinking about this work as if it was inside of us, occupying our mouth, or stomach or bloodstream, rather than just existing for our eyes and brains. I'm motivated by the way this alternate mode, decentralized, transformative, processual, finds sympathy with ecological systems, biological systems, electrical systems, digestion, and the weather. I'm interested in the space it makes for physical pleasure, for eccentricity, and for a shift in political understanding about how we situate ourselves in relation to the wider environment. What would you find inside of these works? How would it feel to be consumed by them? This belief system brings moving bodies into the frame. Heavy trees, arms and legs. Footnote 1. Crest. This is the work of Farquhar's that first made me imagine swallowing it or being swallowed by it. There are two bright blue and red birds in the centre. Something like the inside of a throat, tonsils revealed. A biscuit or planet balances on top of the work. The oil paint colours make me think it would be at first acidic to taste, then sweet like medicine, and perhaps leave an aftertaste like overripe fruit. The work would change colour, effervescent, as it met the enzymes and hydrochloric acid in your stomach, and the reaction would cause the feeling of a roller coaster, maybe. A surge of nervous energy. Imagining the series of transformations makes me think of the questions in Kim Hyesoon's poem of multiple selves or a microbiome at work, in motion. Who's drawing up the water inside your body? Who's having sex inside your body? Who's shivering in the mud inside you? Who's heaving up water beneath the rock layers inside you? Footnote 2. Who is it that occupies your gut? Labouring or being terrified or reproducing or having sex for fun. When you start to think about the work in relation to a series of biological processes, its physicality comes to the fore. Talk about the body. Don't ignore the senses. This is a note I wrote to myself when I was thinking about this project. The exhibition's title, Heavy Trees, Arms and Legs, is a line from Rebecca Tomas' poem, Palermo. In the poem, a sense of heaviness occurs in the state of all-consuming physical pleasure, that of the sea slug with its own containing joy. Footnote 3. It is another summer, 2020, and I'm reading Tomas' poem for the second time. I'd read it once before when it was first published and immediately sent it to my mum. I loved it so much. Rereading it now, its idiosyncratic pacing like short breaths, I remember that it's all about sex. And food. Peach lips, with Orvieto rubbed on them, hot blood bubbling up from all this. These are things that are often left out of art writing, even when it's ostensibly focused on the body. I don't think that Farquhar and Songs to Tyre's works have forgotten that these things are part of the body's life. We had started with minutes. We love their fullness, cells flowing through this body of time, purging all but their passing through us, and our letting them flow through. Years pulled their lengths through us and we hung on to them. They strung us a ways along and up, and they kept us from drowning in the terrible minutes. Footnote 4. Seaside Town is 5 Oamaru stone sculptures, 3 small and 2 large. The small works weigh 65 kgs each, the larger 150 kgs. After the crate that had carried it from Songs to Tyre studio into Whanganui Ātara to the Suta Gallery in Whakatū, Nelson, was unloaded from the truck. To move each work around the gallery, we had to kneel on the floor and very gently wrestle with it. I found that I had to go slow and almost imagine it was a heavy part of my own body or someone else's that I could not bear to bruise or scratch. Even with the care taken, fine particles of the limestone could be seen on the plastic after it was removed from the base. I imagine even smaller ones may have been on our skin and cotton gloves. There are many points of commonality between this work and the human body once you start to think of it that way. Limestone is a sedimentary rock made of tiny fossils, shell fragments, calcified. It's bone too. Embedded in the wax, as well as fish bones and scales, there are the fake nails, eyelashes. These are plastic, but bear a slightly melancholy relationship to body parts, idealized and immortalized. Gleaming shell pink nails that would belong to a mermaid. Black RuPaul-length lashes. They are things to be worn rather than grown organically, suggesting the body can be a site of transformation, the accumulation of identities, narrative. Limestone is a body. This is not a new thought or way of understanding the world. In Aotearoa, the Waitaha tribe of Te Waipounamu recognise Oamaru stone as the bones of the Ātua Wahine Hinitua Huanga, particularly through a story in which she allows her back to be used as a grindstone. Footnote 5. Kōrero from Te Ika a Māui also mentions Hinitua Huanga. Footnote 6. Songs to Tyre brought this to my attention during their research for the project. It was part of a conversation with friend Anna Iti, whose recent work, The Woman Whose Back Was a Whetstone, 2021, also addresses Hinitua Huanga. Inside of each of the seaside town works, there are also thousands of years. Limestone in Aotearoa is thought to have been formed during the Oligocene, 23 to 34 million years ago. The other materials in the work are also long-lasting. Beeswax, used to seal up sarcophagi, has survived thousands of years. The wax in Songs to Tyre's work will likely endure long into the future. Plastic lives on too. Today's fake fingernails and eyelashes will be part of the midden we leave behind. Swallow this work. I think you might taste the residual hint of crustaceans, even just slightly, like something that has been stored on a shelf with shrimp crackers. In the throat it would be coarse, rough as cruscuits and gritty too. Sitting in the stomach as it digests, heavy but soluble like dispron over time. Roughage. Would it clear out your insides like fibre? Would it go through you? Am I thinking about swallowing or being swallowed by the work? Surely something must be excreted. I think of Jory Graham's line about the way years go into our bodies, purging all but their passing through. Swallow, and I think you'll taste grief. Or mourning, too. For the full minutes and the terrible ones, and the awareness that limestone is older than us all. A reason to hold on to it like an anchor, like ballast, and not like anything else at all, just a rock. I think of Song Sitai's work and I think of the fish bones. Almost translucent, strong like plastic, but fragile like matchsticks. In the work, the fish bones are a small element, almost submerged in the yolk-coloured wax, but they are also a primary narrative reference, linking the work to Song Sitai's experience of visiting their uncle's cuttlefish factory on the coast in Thailand. After the Heavy Trees project, the artist made another fishbone work, a digital animation thrown onto a fan using high-density LED lights, creating a holographic effect. Footnote 8. In my memory of the seaside town work, this projection whirs above it somehow in constant motion, like a kite or like a ghost. For as long as we'd been speaking about this project, Whakua had been occasionally emailing me pieces of her writing. Some of them were included in this publication. It seems to me that there's no point in making hard distinctions between these and Whakua's paintings. That is, they too concern the body as a system, finely organized and with many points of connection with the greater biosphere. Many fruits appear, and insides are not clearly distinguishable from outsides. Often, organs are on the outside of the body, and the world of the text is shaped by the internal life of the narrator. I could assume this narrator is Whakua, composed of fruit and vegetables, organs and liquids and gases, but there's room for more than oneself in these texts. In both Whakua's texts and paintings, recurring motifs, eyes, moons, stomachs, wax candles, birds, strawberries, irregular geometric structures and background are deeply entangled. Plaster sculptures, often balancing on the canvases they accompany, suggest the dynamic state of all matter, the transformative possibilities of mould, melt, scab and fossil. All Whakua's works belong to a warming and climatically unstable planet. In this work, there's also the heaviness of grief and the recognition that we live in an ecologically compromised world, that contemporary capitalism exists in blunt violation of our relationship to the earth. It's 2022 now, and last year Aotearoa had its highest temperatures on record. I don't want to write about art anymore without writing about its connection to the world in this most pressing sense. And if one was swallowed by the work? Dark, yes, but the kind of darkness in which you can see for miles, or something can. I remember Merlin Sheldrake's writing on fungi. The soil was a horizonless external gut, digestion and salvage everywhere. Flocks of bacteria surfing on waves of electrical charge, chemical weather systems, subterranean highways, slimy infective embrace, seething intimate contact on all sides. Footnote 9. Tellingly, the depiction of the system immediately relies on images of other systems. Everything is in motion, and the border between internal and external is no longer relevant. I'm sitting at the table on a cool summer afternoon when everyone has gone for ice cream. I'm sitting here to write, but so content I can hardly make my fingers type. I would happily sleep or just stare out at the harbour, dark green around the edges where the trees meet the rocks. Ask myself again, why write in relation to this work at all? With Heavy Trees, Arms and Legs, I think it matters to try. While these works are complete, they also exist in relation to each other and to myriad events and processes in the wider world. Words can act as carriers for some of these relationships, articulating material anew or drawing new lines between things and us. Language has its capacity, perhaps because language is something that we embody. It's in our mouths, ears and bodies, our hands, as well as in our brains. In this sense, language, and maybe especially metaphorical language, has a way of reminding us that we are in the world only as much as we are of the world, that we are made up of our relationships. Writing in parallel to the work is one way of materializing this, and more, it makes space for trying out new ways of relating to each other. In Agua Viva, Lispector writes of the search for the exclusively bodily meaning. composing sentences by stringing together the instants which comprise physical experience. I'm drawn by this as a narrative to account for the bodily response that works like song satires and farquhars elicit in me. Finally, I realize it's about listening too, that the ultimate vibration, or closer to home, te oro o te ao, footnote 10, is the frequency that connects our bodies with the works, the energy that exists between us. It's not easy to put this kind of energy into words. Lispector's battle is relatable. How can I tell you about what this work feels like to experience? I can only return to the work and try. It is heavy, weighted by gravity, and there is darkness in the layering of the material sealed in between the layers of wax and stone. It is light too, with pieces like rice crackers and two pink candles or fireworks ready to ignite, fly. Footnote 1. Rebecca Tsimas, Palumo, London Review of Books 40, number 19, 11 October 2018. Footnote 2. Kim Hyesoon, Heart's Exile, Day 47. Translated by Don Mead Choi, Stronger Than Bone, On Feminisms. Edited by Daphne Ayers, Natasha Ginwala, and Jill Winder. Berlin, Archive Books and Gwangju Biennale Foundation, 2021. Footnote 3. Tsimas, Palumo, 2018. Footnote 4. Jory Graham, to 2040, London Review of Books 43, number 6, 18 March 2021. Footnote 5. For a contemporary retelling of the Hine Tua Huanga story, see Hemi Kelly, Rata, in Pūrākau, Māori Myths Retold by Māori Writers, edited by Witi Ihamaira and Fiti Hiriaka, Auckland, Penguin, 2019. Footnote 6. Te Ahu Karamu, Charles Royal, First Peoples in Māori Tradition, Ancestors from the Natural World, Te Ara, the Encyclopedia of New Zealand, accessed 11 January 2022. Footnote 7. Ana Iti's work, The Woman Whose Back Was a Whetstone, was commissioned for Swallowing Geography. Matt Pine, Shona Rapira Davies, Kate Newby, Ana Iti. Curated by Megan Tarnity Cornell, Covert Brewster Art Gallery, Ngamotu, New Plymouth, 8 October 2021 to 13 February 2022. Footnote 8. Song Satire's work Skinned, 2021, was included in a second iteration of Heavy Trees, Arms and Legs at Coastal Signs, Tāmaki Makaurau from 30 July to 9 October 2021. A further development of Song Satire's Fishbone work is included in this publication. Footnote 9. Merlin Sheldrake, cited in Francis Gooding, From Its Myriad Tips, London Review of Books 43, number 10, 20 May 2021. Footnote 10. I first heard these words, Te Oro o Te Ao, as the title of sound artist Rachel Shearer's PhD. Te Oro o Te Ao, The Resounding of the Earth, Tāmaki Makaurau, Auckland University of Technology Thesis, 2018. About listening to the earth, listening with one's whole body. Shearer writes, Te Oro o Te Ao engages listening at the threshold of the audible and the inaudible, encompassing spaces and ideas that surround frequencies. A related discussion of Shearer's work can be found in Cassandra Barnett, Listen Your Way Home, Aotearoa Journal of Māori Art, 1. 2019.